I'm sitting in a cafe in Ridley Road Market in deepest Hackney, in Dalston, with Andrew Boff, who's one of the Conservative Party's Assembly members. Andrew lives around here, so he and I have got something in common. And what I'd like to ask you first, Andrew, if it's not a slightly leading question, I know you to be a reggae lover, a man who, like me, hasn't had a shave this morning. You're a gay man who smokes and rides a bike. What are you doing in the Conservative Party?
Why aren't all the other reggae-loving gay people who smoke and cycle also in the Conservative Party? They're, you know, we look at the agenda that Boris is pursuing in London. Hey, you know, it's one that's welcoming for all sorts.
Obviously, you've been a member of the Conservative Party for quite a long time. You were leader of Hillingdon Borough Council, I believe. Can you tell us a little bit about why you were drawn to conservatism and perhaps talk us through the highlights of your career so far, leading up to the London Assembly membership?
I mean, everybody's political journeys are probably boring to relate, but like everyone, I thought about the left when I was much, much younger, 15. I think I was a member of the West London Communist Party. That lasted about 3 weeks, and I thought, these people are nutters. And then I realised that the thing that was most important to me was personal liberty and personal freedom. And the party that represents that most strongly is the Conservative Party. It's as simple as that.
Okay, now one of the themes that you seem very exercised about in your work for the London Assembly and locally are these whole questions, these complicated questions about regeneration, about local communities, localism, some people call it, and you get very cross about attempts to damage or interfere with or impose upon things like places like Ridley Road Market. Why is this something that matters so much to you?
I think what really matters in London is a recognition that what London is made up of, and that is of communities. And the idea that you can improve those communities from the top rather than assisting what they're doing from the bottom up is such an old idea that's been disproved on so many occasions that I don't know why it's still current. And yet local authorities throughout London, and indeed the country, are undervaluing those local communities, finding things, for example, like Ridley Road here, a bit of an embarrassment to them. And they've got this plan to improve things. And in that improvement, it actually means removing the very thing that made those markets and those shopping areas important to local communities. That's what really annoys me about the short-sighted attitude of many local authorities with regard to their shopping areas.
I suppose their argument would be that this is a, you know, not a particularly affluent area, and they would say that about other areas of similar types around London, and that the way to bring greater affluence to the people in the area is to redevelop, to bring in perhaps slightly classier housing units, which will bring a slightly more affluent sort of person, and they've got a bit more money and they'll spend it and there'll be a general benefit to the local economy. What do you say to that argument?
Well, they're wrong, aren't they? I mean, what they're actually doing is embarking in what I call year zero regeneration. And year zero regeneration basically says get rid of what's there and impose some sort of pastiche of Basingstoke on the local community. Their solution to poverty is to ship out all the poor people and bring in people who've got money. That's their actual aim in some areas. I'm convinced that that is the strategic aim in some areas of London. What you should be doing is recognising, if we look at, I mean, obviously, you know, people can't see, but if we sit here at this in this cafe, we can see a bustling street full of people, a lot of people on very low incomes who've got choice in front of them. They've got choice of healthy food. They've got choice between very budget goods. The local authority here is deciding that it's going to regenerate Ridley Road. So what do they want to do? I suspect that what they want to do is put a sort of pretend Cockney theme park down here and increase all the prices for the stall holders, force some of these businesses out, which have been going for generations, in order to attract tourist money. Tourist money is not the reason that communities survive. It's the local economy that matters. Now, once they've put up all the prices, where do these people go? Where do they go? They're forcing these people into the kind of supermarket choices that a lot of people have. And I'm sorry, supermarket choice is no choice at all.
If we go back to what makes you a conservative, of course, this sort of tension between wanting choice for people, wanting to help the small person, the small business person, and on the other hand, being intellectually sympathetic to the greater forces of capitalism and so on. There's a kind of tension there, isn't there, which is difficult to resolve for you, surely?
Well, not really, no. I mean, even if the most libertarian of people believes there's only three functions of government, the protection of the realm, the upholding of law and order, and the breaking of monopolies. The breaking of monopolies is a very, very important function, and that is that you've got to recognise that when you've got a free market, what are you actually saying it's free from? It's not just free from intervention by big government. It's about free from being bullied by large corporates as well, large multinational companies, large supermarkets. Now, that local economy, that local free enterprise depends upon the local authorities protecting them against that kind of unfair competition, and it is unfair competition. So in order for the free market to thrive, it needs some intervention and protection.
Very eloquently put. I'm going to write that down later and memorise it. Now, earlier on, we were a few blocks away down by Dalston, what's going to be the new Dalston station, and you made some extremely uncomplimentary noises about the rather tall block of flats, which is begin to take shape over there. There's been a vociferous local campaign against the redevelopment of Dalston. Obviously hasn't had a great deal of success. What's the story there? What's the moral of the story there from your point of view?
The real moral is not about, you see, I think sometimes the arguments are misplaced about why people were so upset about the Dalston development. It's not that it's a tower block, though people generally don't like tower blocks. They think we're building the slums for the future, which will be knocked down in a few years' time. It's not about the protection of, not particularly about the protection of historic buildings. There were historic buildings on the site, and I think that they should have been protected. It's not about that. It's about people's local influence. It's about the fact that when they did a survey, 900 of the survey, 900 said they didn't want that to go ahead, and 10 said they did, and the 10 won out. It's the fact that there is such a disconnection between people and government now. The government feels that it can push this kind of development through, ignoring all local sentiments, and still feel fine about carrying forward. It's a disconnection that's created a political class whose arrogance is bolstered by political machines that at election time can pull votes out. We've got to break this. We've got to start closing that gap between government and between the people. And that's why I've been very, very fervent about things like citizens' initiatives, about the ability for people actually to put initiatives down to the local authorities, have those voted on by local people, and have that carried out. We've got to stop this. Government is going in an awful direction, and it's a direction where people are feeling more and more lost and more unrepresented by the government around them. And that's not a party issue, because, you know, around London, it doesn't matter what the party is. If you lose that connection, then effectively it's democracy that's losing.
Of course, in a place like Hackney, which is wall-to-wall Labour, even in the last local elections where there was an awful lot of shifting around in different boroughs in London, Hackney remained absolutely solidly the same with a mountainous majority, completely undented. What hope is there, if you want to change the administration here, of doing that?
At the risk of sounding like an old Trotsky, I organise. I think people have got to realise that they can take control of their local authorities. They've just got to spend a little time and a little organisation in making people realise that the government, in some areas of London, the government they got at the moment is not good government, and they need to change it. And you can change it. And there's plenty of examples of where people have taken the local initiative and overturned decisions that were threatening their area. There is a degree of fatalism that people get into after a while, where they think nothing can ever change, and that's when you see turnouts decline, that's when you see people getting more and more disenchanted with government. It just needs somebody to kickstart that and say, look, we can do something about this, and I very much hope that they'll do that in many parts of London.
And let me ask you a sort of general question about Boris, because I'm very interested by this apparent tension. I asked him about this myself when I interviewed him a few weeks ago, between, on the one hand, his desire to devolve power to allow local authorities, boroughs, to make their own decisions. On the other hand, he's got this commitment to protecting green space. He says he cares a lot about things like street markets. And of course, those things come into conflict. There are a number of examples of that. Now, it strikes me that this is likely to become quite a problem for him because, whatever the rights and wrongs, some people, such as those who are very unhappy about the development that seems likely to happen in Crystal Palace Park, for example, are going to say, well, look, you said you'd protect green space. You said that parks were sacrosanct, or that's what we thought you meant anyway. And yet, you're not stepping in, throwing your weight about, maybe like Ken Livingstone would have done, to stop things happening. How does he get out of that dilemma, do you think?
Well, it's going to be really tough, because obviously if you do believe in borough government or government devolved as far as you can down to the individual, then the worst thing you can then do is go and make decisions for those local authorities. And I know this is going to be a constant source of tension throughout his mayoralty, but the principle is right. The principle that it must be up to local authorities to determine the direction of that they want to go in, on the basis of a wider London plan, which Boris is developing. I mean, the London plan will take a long time to revise, but I think we cannot look to the Mayor of London as just something, as just sort of a second go over local developments, a second chance. Local authorities have got to realise that you know, they are accountable to their electorates, and if their electorates are saying one thing and they're saying another, then the local electorates themselves have got to do something about that. They've got to make their influence known at a local level. You can't expect the Mayor of London to keep making these decisions. Having said that, it is the job of the Mayor of London to say what kind of London he thinks we should be living in a few years' time. The overall strategic direction. In that, Boris has been fantastically strong about the greening of London, about how it should be a more friendly place, more based upon local communities. More encouraging to small businesses, more family housing, and less of these one and two bedroom flats that have been littering around London. These are all things that he can set the strategic direction for, and in that he's different from Ken. I think Livingstone had this technocratic view of London, whereby the whole area was going to be taken over by basically housing developers in order to meet these housing targets, irrespective of the quality of that housing, for example. He had possibly very little sympathy for actual green issues, despite cozying up to the Green Party on the London Assembly. We couldn't actually see much in the way of that, of real policy developments that wasn't entirely tokenistic. Boris's commitment to green issues is very, very strong, but his commitment to democracy is probably stronger. And for that reason, we will carry on seeing that tension between him taking decisions centrally and allowing local authorities to take a decision close to the people.
Let me ask you finally, how are you finding it working at the Assembly? Been there 8 months now. What's it been like for you?
I'm astounded at how much work there is to do. It is an awful lot of time that one has to spend. And I was one of those people who used to go around going on about GLA members doing nothing, taking all this money from the council taxpayer and then, you know, putting their feet up. Actually, there is a lot of work to do on the GLA. However, I would say that I don't think it's probably the best model of scrutiny for the London Mayor. I would much prefer to see a body that comprised of the local, the London boroughs scrutinising the mayor. Having said that, it's an opportunity to the London Assembly gives you an opportunity to put forward those things that you're most passionate about. And in that, I'm very honoured. I'm very honoured that my party chose me to do this. And I hopefully, You know, I will use the next 3.5 or however many years I've got to try and push forward the agenda of reconnecting communities with their government, because that's ultimately what I'm about.
It's a nice note to end on. Thanks very much, Andrew.